The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other hosts or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
Welcome to Words of Change with Mark Patrick, licensed professional counselor.
Welcome. I am Mark Patrick, and I'm grateful to be with you today. This is a show where I like to explore words and ideas, concepts, phrases, anything that can help you kind of think and to make some help you to make some healthy and positive changes in your life. And we try to do that by looking at kind of wisdom from around the world and seeing how it can be applicable to our everyday lives. And today, today's words are a free adaptation of a Chinese expression that I came across that we're going to explore in a little bit of detail. So I came across this when I was in grad school, and I think it was already kind of freely adapted, and so I'm going to freely adapt it even more. So if anybody knows the original expression, forgive me, but I like the way this works. So the phrase goes like this. You are like all other people. You are like some other people. You are like no other person. I'll say it again. You are like all other people. You are like some other people. You are like no other person. So we're going to delve into that a little bit today and talk about what these could mean. And I'm going to take it in reverse order, actually. So the first one I'm going to talk about is you are like no other person. Now, right now, I'm recording this in early 2018. And right now in our country, there is a political climate where a certain group is irritated with the notion of people being special, people being unique. And so there's a term for it, which is snowflake. Right. So the idea is that no two snowflakes are alike. Every single snowflake that's out there is completely distinct and unique. And at this particular moment in our political culture, this by some people is perceived as being precious, being overly solicitous of people's needs, being coddling. You know, you can think of people who feel that, you know, participation trophies for kids are ridiculous because nobody wins, everybody wins, that kind of a thing. And in the political moment, the snowflake is used as kind of an insult. So setting aside the political piece, which is to say that, in my view, anybody calling names to anyone else is really just not helpful. But aside from all of that, that attitude that to kind of look at someone as unique or individual is a bit precious, it kind of obscures a deeper truth, which if we allow ourselves to really sink into it, can have some pretty profound implications. Because the fact of the matter is, everything in your internal life is absolutely your own. And your time on this earth is completely and utterly and distinctly unique. Your thoughts, your feelings, your attitudes, beliefs, memories, habits, preferences, likes and dislikes, your plans, your dreams, your disappointments, your achievements, all of those are completely yours and nobody else's. Now, John Donne, the poet, wrote, No man is an island, and I apologize for the gender discrimination. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. And so the idea there is that, I mean, I'm not saying that you do everything yourself. Of course, we are connected to other people and we're connected to communities. But the fact of the matter is that you have your own experience in the world. From the day that you are born, whether you realize it or not, and even probably slightly before you were born, you were beginning in your mind to make a mental model of the world. It's called a schema, where you were testing out, what is the world like? What should I expect from it? And when kids are playing, you know, take the Cheerio, take it off the tray, drop it on the floor. You're experimenting with what will happen when I drop the Cheerio on the floor. Well, one thing that might happen is that dad might reach over and pick it up and put it back on the tray. So we create these models, we test these hypotheses ever since we were little, where we were figuring out what we expect of the world. And so that helps informs our habits and our understandings of, is the world a safe place? Am I okay? What do I need to do? So everybody has this internal life. Everybody has this consciousness. Now, there are two ways that I'd like to illustrate this, and one of them is humorous, and one of them is not so humorous. So consider this anecdote. A year ago, the New York Times reported on Yale University's Canine Cognition Center, where volunteers can take their dogs to be studied and then rated on how intelligent their dogs are. If you complete the study at Yale with your dog, you can then get a bumper sticker that says that your dog got a bachelor's, master's, and PhD degrees at Yale. And this is reportedly part of a growing field where humans are volunteering their pets, Duke does it as well, to learn just how smart their dogs are. Now, I remember reading this. I can't believe it was a whole year ago, but I remember reading it. And just think, when I was telling you that, what was your first reaction? One reaction you might have is, oh, that's about dogs and I'm a cat person, so not a big deal. One reaction you might have is, who has all the time and energy to waste on stupid stuff like getting a degree, quote unquote, for your dog? Another reaction you might have is, oh, Yale University, Ivy League, bunch of elitist snobs doing trivial research on dogs. That's really silly. Another reaction you might have is, sign me up. Sign my dog up. I'll go to New Haven. I'll check it out. Another reaction somebody might have is, you know, I would love to do that, but my dog is really not that smart. I love him dearly, but he's just not that smart. So it wouldn't even be worth it. So my point in mentioning this is that, not that there's any right or wrong reaction to any of this, but all of these reactions are pretty plausible. I imagine that people would have those reactions. And all of them are distinct. I have no way of presuming, I have no way of predicting ahead of time, if I tell this anecdote to somebody, hey, you know, I read about this in the paper. I have absolutely no way of knowing ahead of time what kind of a reaction you or anybody else is going to have. So this is another way of just pointing out, you have your own reactions, you have your own privacy, you have your own inner life, which is completely distinct from me or anybody else. So that's kind of the humorous example. Now here's the other piece. And this one is not so humorous. When I was an intern in grad school, I was at a behavioral health, it was a drug rehab facility in downtown St. Louis. And it was men's unit, and it was day treatment. They were in residential, so they would come in every day. And within a certain period of time of the residents being there, they had to write for the group an autobiography. So they were being asked to reflect on, how did I get here? In terms of what substance of choice and just their past, and really trying to help them take inventory and take stock. And you had to read it to the group, which, as you can imagine, if you've been in active addiction and you're trying to recover, this can be a pretty difficult and painful experience and pretty humbling if you took it seriously. And what was incredibly powerful to me is that pretty much everyone who presented their autobiography when I was there and had the opportunity to sit in had something that was really hard for them to say, something that was particularly embarrassing or shameful or just emotionally charged that was very difficult, and they would need help. And sometimes, if they were lucky, they were able to kind of get through it and share it and get the support of everybody else. But here's the thing that struck me. For every single person, the thing that they were most embarrassed about or most ashamed of or struggled with emotionally the most was different. There were different things. Everybody had some connection to something that they just couldn't let go of, but it was different for each person. And so you never really knew until you heard their story exactly what it was that they were struggling with and dealing with. And so this was another way that I kind of learned. It kind of taught me, you know, each person has a very unique story. The snowflake thing is real, actually. We all are completely unique and unlike anybody else. And that is a truth that can be very powerful to us because it helps us to take charge of our own lives. And the thoughts and feelings and ideas and experiences that we have are very distinctly our own. And your thoughts and feelings and ideas and experiences are distinctly your own. We're going to take a quick break here and we will come right back. This is Mark Patrick of Words of Change. You're listening to KWRHLP 92.9 FM, your community radio station in Webster Groves, Missouri. Has modern life got your head spinning? Do you seek new directions in your life? For healing, inspiration, insight, and support, listen to Words of Change every Monday at 9 a.m. and Wednesday at 4:30 p.m. right here on KWRHLP 92.9 FM Radio 63119. Welcome back. This is Words of Change, and I'm Mark Patrick, and thank you for joining us today. Today we are talking about an expression, you are like all other people, you are like some other people, and you are like no other person. Before the break, I spoke about the last one, which is you are like no other person, and now I'm going to take a step and work backwards. So you are like some other people. So what does this mean? I'm like some other people. Well, on the face of it, it can be easy to identify that there are other people who maybe have friends or family, relatives, coworkers, whatever, that you have things in common with. And what's important about this, there are a few things that are important about this. The Buddhists refer to this as suchness, which is the idea that you as a person have specificity. So you were born in a particular place at a particular time. You have a particular gender. You have a particular family. You have particular parents and so on. Where you live in a particular city. You live in a particular, or, you know, wherever you live in a particular state, if you live in the U.S., all of these things are very, very specific. They can be defined. If you have an employer, if you have political affiliations, if you have things that you do for hobbies, all of this stuff has to do with who you are. But the point is, through all these things, you do not have to feel that you are an island. There are other people that you can relate to because you are like some other people. You know, it's interesting. There are folks who do lots of research on primates. Think of Jane Goodall with the apes, or Frans van der Waal is another famous primatologist who I believe studies chimpanzees. Chimpanzees, by the way, are our closest genetic relative in the animal kingdom. So sometimes we look to chimp behavior as a way of illuminating our own behavior. And the fact of the matter is that chimps are very much tribal, as we are, and they very much have families, clans. There's a lot of family dynamics. There have been entire books, lots and lots of books written on chimp behavior. And it just reminds us of how deeply tribal we are. We as human beings do not live in isolation. We are very social creatures, and we connect to other groups. We connect to other people. We look for affiliation. We look for connection. We look for, who do I belong to? What tribe do I belong to? What group do I belong in? And so this is something that can be a source of comfort. It can be problematic depending on what groups we decide to relate to, but it can also be a source of comfort and help. So the notion that we remind ourselves that I am like some other people can be very helpful, and it can be helpful to reflect on. For example, in this country, race is a big deal. You know, speaking as a white person very candidly, there are folks who kind of see whiteness as the norm. And they don't realize that it is ways of being white are one way among many. And so it can be important to be conscious of the way we relate to other people and the groups that we belong to, and not just assume that all other groups are like our group. So that's one aspect of you are like some other people, but there's another aspect as well. And I'm speaking here as a mental health professional. If there are things that you struggle with, whether it's anxiety, depression, trauma, eating disorders, I mean, there are all kinds of things that happen to us in our lives. And if there are things mentally that you struggle with, then that kind of connects you to a whole nother group of people that you may not consciously be affiliating with. But the idea is that, you know, folks who suffer from anxiety, folks who suffer from depression, people who deal with various disorders like obsessive compulsive disorder, for example, you are part of a group that has been around for a long time. There are many people who deal with these things. You do not have to feel alone when you are struggling with these things or struggling with anything. Family dynamics, my goodness, we all have that. We all have family dynamics that we have to deal with in our lives, and they're not always healthy. So to identify that you are like some other people, hopefully can push you either to take sustenance and comfort in the people who you do connect with, but also to remind you that there may be some other groups that you could connect with that maybe you may be disconnected from right now, but that if you were to seek them out, that you might have something in common with. And that too can be a source of sustenance. So finally, the last section, and for me, this is my favorite. You are like all other people. This can be the most challenging of all of the three of them, because if we step back and take a look at the big picture, the fact is you are one person out of billions and billions of people who have walked the earth in the past and will walk the earth in the future. And in this way, you're not in any way different or unique from all of the other humans who are inhabiting the globe. At this very second, in fact. We can call these considerations existential. We're born to die. We are members of the human race. We try to get our needs met. We eat, we eliminate, we seek shelter, we adapt, we try to survive, we fend off predators, we procreate, we go through various developmental stages from birth to middle age to death. Like I say, these are considered existential concerns. And as somebody who has read some of the existential philosophers who are a bunch of dead white guys, I will tell you as a group, when they kind of looked at all of this and wrote about this, it was pretty gloomy. They were pretty negative. It's not always what I would call uplifting reading. Here's a quick poem from 1899 by Stephen Crane. A man said to the universe, "Sir, I exist." "However," replied the universe, "the fact has not created in me a sense of obligation." If you're just one person and there are billions of other people in the world, it can make you feel very small. It can make us feel insignificant. It can make you feel like an ant just amongst a bunch of other ants. And at times, to be perfectly honest, that can make you feel like there's no point. It just seems like, you know, you're just one small person. But there are two redeeming features of this that I want to talk about. If we accept the fact that, and I do believe it is a fact, that we are like all other people that ever were and ever have been, then it's something that we all have in common. This is something that unites us. It's been referred to, and again, forgive all the gender stereotypes this session, but it's been referred to as the brotherhood of man. All of us suffer. When the Buddha said that life is suffering, boy, he was not kidding. But we can take comfort in the fact that other human beings share our burdens and that they can understand what we're going through. So if we stop looking at the bleak side of it and we consider that other people also can relate to us in our suffering, then there's another piece that comes in as well. There is a great freedom that comes from knowing that my small life is the only one that I have to worry about. You know, sometimes I'll go to art museums and see these beautiful pieces, incredible things that people made from thousands of years ago. A lot of them are very practical sculptures and trays and cups and knives and all kinds of things. And so many of them that are beautiful from all over the world were made by artists who were and forever will be anonymous. Now, this is very humbling, but it can also help us remove our egos from the equation. You are a human being, no more, but no less. T.S. Eliot wrote, "For us, there is only the trying. The rest is not our business." If you keep these three ways of looking at yourself in mind, all at the same time, it could allow you to live a life fully and completely, knowing that it's yours, which is both completely important and completely unimportant, completely your own and completely anonymous at the same time. You can do your best knowing that when the final story of humanity is written, you will have taken part in it. And it may be a very small part, but it's your part. So you can make the best of it now. So that is our show for today. I want to ask you, be well, stay safe, love yourself. I'm Mark Patrick. Thank you so much for listening. I will talk to you next week. Our theme music was composed by Eric Hall. You can find more of his music at www.erichall.com. For more information on counseling or to schedule a free 50-minute consultation, please visit markpatrickcounseling.com or call 314-325-1691. Until next time, I'm Mark Patrick.